Deadly Grounds Coffee knows how important your coffee is to you. Every batch is roasted to perfection with a unique special method that brings out the richest, deepest, smoothest flavor you'll ever find. We're coffee freaks too, and deadly serious about our brew. Just one sip and you'll know why we say, once you go deadly, you don't go back. It's truly coffee to die for. So when you're ready to get a little deadly, get online and order yours at getdeadly.com. It's coffee so good, it's scary.
Greetings and welcome once again to another episode of the Retro Red Octopus Cephalo Podcast, the only show that celebrates all the things that made growing up awesome. We are part of the Dorkening and Inebriart Podcast Networks, and as always, we are brought to you by Deadly Grounds Coffee. I am your host, 8-Bit Alchemy, and with me right now on this lovely crow's nest episode we're doing is Mr. Parasite Steve.
Oh, hello, Mr. 8-Bit Alchemy. How are you?
Oh, hello. Oh, I'm well. I'm pretty well.
And okay. You? I'm doing well. Do I sound a little weird tonight? I had to go to a different room for recording.
A little bit, but it's okay.
Well, hopefully it's not too bad, and no. We can just muscle through.
Yeah.
Because we got a specific thing to talk about.
Yeah, we do. As you already know, this here episode is all about one particular X spelled, not X-rated, but spelled with an X game for the Super Nintendo.
That you may not have heard of.
That you may not have heard of. That is Zardian for the Super Nintendo. And for those eagle-eyed listeners, eagle-eared listeners,
this is not the first time you've come upon this.
No, it's not.
I guess.
Yeah. Your eagle-eared listeners.
Do eagles even have good hearing? I don't know.
Well, they don't need it, right? They just.
I mean, I know what you're going for.
Yeah, eagle-eyed is usually a good test of eyesight. So, like, maybe like an owl-eared.
For those bunny-eared listeners.
Yeah, what's a good listener? You are that. But if you've been paying attention, we just recently did an episode, another crow's nest. This is like a crow's nest off of a crow's nest.
I know, we're like making up for previous seasons.
Yeah, this is baby bird crow's nest from the first nest. That episode was about our mom's favorite games, and it was a very eclectic list. If you stayed all the way through, you were probably had your head spinning at least twice. And one of the games was Zardian for the Super Nintendo. And we, you know, it just kind of got stuck in me and Parasite's craw after that episode. And we're like, hey, let's play through the whole game. That'd
something
be a fun thing.
Something we've never been able to do.
Yeah, something we've never really, honestly, even super tried to do. Like, right. Realizing how far I'd actually gotten in this game ever, it was maybe only like two or three levels. So, yeah, I can't say I probably gave it the fairest of shakes back in the day. But it's also not an obvious or easy game, so like you couldn't fault me for not actually getting terribly far.
No, I don't. In fact, I don't fault you at all, because I'm in that same exact boat that you're in.
Wow, hot diggity.
Yeah, I mean this game was just the problem is while there is some stuff going for it, other than like decent graphics and like really cool character designs. All the like real positives I think you can really mine from this game, because it takes a lot of work, is like, you know, by hour like, you know, 3 or 4 maybe, because you have to play this game in one shot. There's no passwords. There's no save.
Yep.
So it's like eventually when this game beats you down to the stage of understanding, like, because it's on such an island by itself in so many ways, and we'll get to that, like why that is.
It's such a truly weird and singular game with no comparisons to any other games.
Just the way that you have to play this game is to unlearn what you have learned. And once you've done that, it's like, oh, you finally get the rhythm and you're like, this is kind of okay. But like, oh my god, it takes so long for that. So it's so easy to just be like, I played this for half an hour and it sucks.
Yep, absolutely. So for those of you who were there on the first episode, thank you for listening to that. You're already a little familiar. But if you're just randomly listening to this episode for no good goddamn reason, we'll do a little bit of an intro on Zardian, developed by Jorudan, published by Asmik. This game was released on the Super Famicom in 1992 and on the Super Nintendo 1 month later, in the same year. So right after each other. Not a ton of time there for translation.
Early game on the Super Nintendo.
Yeah, very early in the Super Nintendo's lifespan. It should be mentioned that this game was a little bit of a super group, you know, for a video game. It was assembled by all these different industry greats that had, you know, major clout. The soundtrack was done by Kohei Tanaka, known for doing a lot of anime, including the Dragon Ball theme and One Piece and all sorts of different animes. Got a pretty massive career, much bigger outside of gaming. The mechas were designed by Yasuhiro Moriki and Hajime Katoki, both of which are big industry veterans that I personally don't know a lot of the Gundam work, but they are affiliated with Gundam. And the other thing that's crazy is that the story was written by Studio Gainax. And Studio Gainax has done a lot of different anime over the years. So you have like this crazy amalgamania, if you will, of all these creators coming together
Amalgamation.
It should have been the best thing ever. It should have been like Chicken Foot, right? Like, oh yeah, we made this super group with Sammy Hagar and like all these other people, Joe Satriani, and it's like, how's the band? It's like, they're fine, you know. And you're just like, wow, that's so underwhelming. It's like, yeah, tends to be what happens, and that's kind of the deal with this game.
You're like, they're better than Damn Yankees, right? And you're like, and then the other person's like, you paused too long.
You're like, yeah, I already know. The answer's not really. So it was a super group game. Had a ton of clout behind it. Ton of hype. And the other thing is that, like you said, Steve, it was so early in the Super Nintendo lifespan that the people who were developing this game didn't really know what they were doing. They were developing on the Super Nintendo for the first time, and they also only knew of it as this great new, you know, magnificent piece of equipment from Nintendo, and in their brains the sky was the limit. You know, they had all these lofty aspirations, and then they had to really abruptly cut so much of their initial idea and vision back into the game that is now Zardian, that it's a pretty far cry from what the creator was hoping for.
And this was only their like fourth game they ever made or something.
They didn't have a lot under their belt at all.
No.
Yeah.
It looks like their first game might have been Battle Bull on the Game Boy, which I've never heard of. But
no.
Essentially none of the games, if you look up that company, Jorudan, like none of them are really any of, I've never heard of anything except for one, Alien vs. Predator for the Super Nintendo, which was a okay game.
I
certainly liked it more because I love Aliens and Predators. But like it was a fine, slow Super NES beat 'em up. I mean, but
had like a very like realistic color palette, like everything, you know.
Yeah, it was cool looking for sure.
Yeah,
the sprites were good. But yeah, I mean, it's just not a company that like, man, I don't know any of this shit. So
right.
But anyway, this was early game for them, early game for the system. You know, they somehow managed to snag all that incredible A+ talent to make this game that has like, you know, some of the coolest character designs that you're gonna see, especially if you like mechs. And it's on an island initially for so many reasons, like I said, but the first one is because this is like a game that looks like for sure it comes from a manga or an anime, and it just doesn't. It just is this weird thing that they created for this game, and that in and of itself is weird.
Yeah.
Anything that looks like this always has source material. This one didn't. They made this weird story, and it is so like bizarre and somber and like dark and just weird. Mm-hmm. There's so many things about the story, because you get bits of story throughout the game and dialogue, which Oh my God. The dialogue in this game goes by so fast.
Yeah, you can't.
Like most games, like, you know, you're just like mashing that button because you just want it to hurry up. But usually, because usually it'll hang once it's
right. Right.
This is game. Like, it'll be like three sentences to read, and you get like 1.4 seconds to read.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it's on to the next one. So yep. It's almost like.
And I actually kind of want to read it because the story stuff, as weird as it is, it's not bad. It's one of the highlights of the game.
It's at least interesting. All right. So we got there's four playable characters in this game. There's a bunch of levels. You want to trade off the characters? We'll go through them.
Yeah, sure. Sure. Yeah. So, I mean, yeah, there's three that you start the game with. So the first one that you get is, you start with three guys. So at the top of the list, I should say, is Triton, who's just like a humanoid, very much Gundam looking guy with a rifle. Yep. And he jumps, can shoot vertically or horizontally. And that's essentially all you really get to see of him up front. Each character does have special weapons. So he can get like a grenade weapon later that moves very weirdly. It like floats, it travels up and then comes back down if you shoot it up. But if you shoot it forward, it just goes off the screen. It like clearly does not work like a grenade at all. And then there's like a laser beam and a couple other projectile type ones. But Triton's really good. He's like probably, you know, the main one that I used most of the game.
Yeah, because he's the only character that can shoot up, and there's a lot of flying.
So there. Necessary, yeah.
Yeah, flying enemies. So, like, yeah, this is the guy that is the obvious character they know you're going to want to play as the most.
Yep.
Down from that, you have this dude. His name is Alcides. And again, if you heard our last episode that we're referencing, we did go over this, but let's just do it one more time. This guy is basically, he looks like an orange beetle mage, as 8-Bit referred to it in the last episode, which I think is a really good way of putting it. He really is like this humanoid beetle robot guy, and he's carrying a staff that makes him look mage-like, and he is the melee character, so he has a little whip with his antenna that he does. And at first you're like, okay, this guy is utterly useless. Why would I be this character? He can't shoot. He has no projectile. He can't shoot up. Like,
nope. So little going for him.
Worse in every possible way.
Yep.
So that's, you know, but at the time you didn't know how the game works. And like I said, it takes a long time before you get the rhythm of this game. And once you finally do, it actually kind of becomes fun. So let's get to that. But next character.
Yeah. So then the next character is Panthera, who is a quadrupedal animal type mech. Kind of looks like a cat. Panther dog thing. You basically just know it's a beast. It's able to jump in a shape that looks exactly like the screw attack from Super Metroid.
Totally.
It can jump higher than the other characters, but despite being a four-legged creature, it does not move any faster, which is super disappointing. Like, Panthera should have moved faster. 100%.
Yeah, I think so, yeah.
It's crazy that it doesn't. But they do one or two times make you be Panthera because they're much lower to the ground, so they could sneak into a couple of narrow corridors, but they didn't really use that mechanic.
I feel like it was used once.
Yeah, it was like that first level, and then like maybe there was an item that was like in a little narrow spot, but like
there are enemies for sure that we were turning into Panthera for, because it's just like one of those frustrating dumb design things, but they made enemies that were a little bit too low for the other characters' projectiles or the other characters' attacks. So it's like, yeah, you can't even hit them.
Right.
Like, it's right there, and they're shooting at you because they're shooting at your, you know, quadriceps. And, like, you can't, your bullets are just soaring right over their heads, and you have to switch to Panthera, and then you can get them. And you just switch by pressing the select button. And you can select, you know, your guys really quickly. So it's not too bad to switch, but it's just, you know, it's one of those things they make you do. You're these three characters for really most of the game. Like
almost 90%, the whole game. Yeah.
90-95% of the game. And then you trigger later on, a movie sequence where one of the characters ends up getting killed and replaced by the titular Zardian. And Zardian, you know, is the guy on the cover, and he looks even more like a Gundam, and he is just, you know, stronger and basically plays like Triton. He's just like the better version of Triton. He can shoot up. He's the same sort of way, you know, plays the same sort of way. But, you know, they all have four unlockable special, like, super attacks.
Yeah, they're, like, hidden in the levels.
Yeah.
Like, make sure you find them.
Find them, yeah. And then when you press select and you're choosing your guy, it's such a bad interface. It's just so
So, I mean, right off the bat, you keep saying it, but you have to press select. The start button doesn't do anything.
The select button is not used.
Right, it's not used. The select button opens the menu, which is weird. And then you have the worst UI ever.
Yeah. It doesn't even look like you're selecting stuff. Like, it's very bizarre. And if there's a space where you have zero of a thing, like, instead of just lighting up with zero, you know, to show you that, okay, I moved the cursor.
That's your cursor position.
It just, you hear it move, but you don't see anything happen. Yep. So you're like, well, what the hell happened? If you press down again and the next thing has not zero of whatever the ammo is, then that will light back up. So when you're moving around and, you know, if you don't have one of all the things, it's like impossible to even tell where your cursor is.
Yeah, it took us like three levels before we even realized that we could do that, because you open the menu and then you click on a guy and it makes the ding-a-ling sound, which in my mind was just like, okay, it's just confirming that I picked a different character. But it's like, no, that ding-a-ling sound means, okay, you pressed A. Now you're selecting their sub-weapon, which does not get shown until you press up or down. And like you said, if you have nothing on there, it doesn't get selected. And then you have to press A again for another ding-a-ling, and now it's selecting what item do you want to have equipped. And all of it doesn't have a flashing indicator or a highlighted box. It's like,
so bad.
Wow, this is amazingly bad.
So that's like UI problems, for sure. I mean, you know, that's one of the weird things about this game, but you know, you can get over it. It's like, okay.
Yep. That's not, you know, the end of the game or anything.
Yeah. It's not. And there is fun to be had. We're not just going to rag on this game. Some fun to be had here.
Yes. This game is one of those games that it is going to tear down your expectations and what you think the game is. When you're going into it, you're going to hop into it and be like, oh, this is going to be Contra. I'm going to be playing as a fast moving character and I'm going to be shooting all these enemies down. And it's going to be high octane and fucking awesome. And we got mechs and guns and
it's
everything.
It's the lowest octane you've ever played.
And it is not that. It is not Contra. This game was intended to be thought of like a role playing game. It wants you, every time you kill an enemy, you gain experience points. And each one of the mechs can level up to level 12. And every time that they level up, all you can visibly see is that your max health bar gets longer, but you also deal more damage. And I feel like by like having more health, you take less damage too. But anyway, your stats go up. But there's nothing telling you that that's all happening. You just see your health bar go up. So when you're going through a level and you're fighting through it and everything takes for a million hits and whatever, and you eventually die and have to start the level over again, you keep all of your experience points that you got. And only the character that you're currently using gets the experience points, but you can switch between the three of them. If one of them gets low on health, you can switch to the other one to use their health bar up and get them some experience points. And that is crucial to playing the game. Is leveling up and becoming strong enough that you're actually formidable to fight the boss.
Yeah, you gotta do a lot of grinding in this. So, I mean, once you're like able to just understand that, you're like, this is not the type of game that you would ever grind ever. It just does not look like it, play like it, nothing. And you realize that's what you gotta do. You gotta play levels over and over and over to get experience. You know, you're farming points, you're killing those boars, and for crappy 30 HP. I mean, 30 XP. Like, honestly, like most of the enemies give you 1, 2, 3. By the end of the game, like some of them are giving you 4 each, so it's low. But it just has a like a permanent counter for each character, and it'll just tell you what the next number that you're gonna level up at. So maybe the first number is 50, and maybe the next one is like 100, and the next one's like, you know, 170. And it'll just keep going up and up. And eventually, you know, you're going to, you know, you're slowly getting better. And nobody crosses 999. And some of them don't even get to 999, which I think is completely bizarre. They like just screwed that up.
They just stop at 900. I mean, why is the max level 12?
Oh, I thought Triton was 999. Are they all 900?
They're all 900.
Oh, yeah. Okay. 900.
Yeah, which is also weird, though. It's weird that they stopped at 900 and called the last level 12. That all just feels like, did they use the wrong variable? Like, is this like a weird thing where they didn't use the right like variable?
We ended up like maxing everybody out. We did beat the game. We didn't do a whole lot of cheating. But what was really like helpful to this game, because you have unlimited lives, unlimited continues. It's just keep going, which I like. But the bummer with this game, if you were playing it back in the day, is that you had to do it all in one shot. There's no password. There's no save.
Which is wild, yeah.
So it's like,
it's
damn.
It's not a short game, dude.
Long game.
Yeah.
I mean, it feels like, it's not like it's such a long game, but you got to do a lot of grinding. You're going to be playing it for a few hours to go through it. It's not like a half hour game. So
it's just like a 4 or 5 hour thing that you have to go through at one go.
Yeah, maybe. Like, I mean, I don't know. Speedruns will probably make liars of us, but I mean, like, I don't know. It seemed like we played it for at least 4 hours, like over the course of 2 days.
2 days, yeah.
So, you know, being able to save it, we played it on our modded SNES Mini.
Yep, super.
And, you know, that really made it a lot more fun, I think, being able to pick it up later.
Right. But, right. I mean, just doing that is worth it for playing on emulator alone. But the other thing that is important to mention is, you know, a lot of times with modern ways of playing classic games, it's such an easy thing to incorporate saving and loading, save states and load states, right? If you play this game using save states like you would any normal platformer on the Super Nintendo, you will never beat it.
Yeah,
because
that's,
you will
that's
really never true. You will never actually experience dying and the slow accumulation of experience points.
That's right. And that's a really good point. Yeah.
It's like actually unplayable if you play it with that mindset. You have to die, start the level over, keep trying and trying and trying, because the game developers were like, the point is that you keep making attempts, but all the while the XP is counting up and up and up, and eventually you'll get the carrot and you'll level up, and all of a sudden the enemies will start dying faster and all that stuff. So it's like, yeah, you kind of just got to play this and die. But like, you save
die
states
a million
like
times and keep going,
right?
Keep trying.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it always feels like, you know, it didn't at first, but eventually when you get it, you know, you're like, okay, we're always making progress no matter what. But like, one thing that I want to share, like my first initial thought was incorrect, but this is might be what I thought back in the day too. So you beat the first level, and you know, you have to do whatever level it is, you have to do in one guy. You have to do in one shot. You do have the three characters you can choose between. There's almost no health pickups. Very rarely.
No checkpoints.
No checkpoints. Very rarely is there health pickups anywhere. There's a few in the game, but not many.
Yeah, and they're fixed. They're not like, oh, you can randomly get one.
Right. It's not like an enemy might drop one. So you're going, and you know, you got to beat the level. Every level in the game you have to beat in one shot with your three characters. And you know, when we finally beat the first level boss, which, by the way, all the bosses in this game are kind of impressive in their size. They're like pretty decent size.
Yeah,
pretty
they
cool.
Are. Yeah, they are. Yep.
Pretty decent bosses. Some of the bosses are downright amazing. And some of them are just pretty decent. This guy actually, to me, looks like the first boss's name is Arms, because he has because he has arms.
He has
a really super clever name.
Yeah.
But yeah, like he just, to me, what I said to you is he looks like a Gradius boss. He's
wicked.
Like wicked bad. He's like mounted on the right side of the screen. He's got one eye. He's got two arms. I'm like, this guy literally could just be in Gradius. But
and
anyway,
no one would even question it. Yeah.
Nobody would question it. But he takes like a billion hits. So you're at this guy, and at this point, you are just weak and pathetic. And holy crap, it's like a 10-minute battle of you just shooting him and shooting him and shooting him. And you're like, oh my God, is he ever going to die? Am I even damaging him, whatever.
Doing anything.
So then we finally beat him and got to the second level. And then the second level we died, and it starts you off. There is a map screen, but it starts you off at the first level. And I was like, okay, are you kidding me? They want you to beat the entire game in one shot or something? Wait, and it's like, no. So it's just a crappy design choice. I wish they hadn't done this. But again, like I said, I was confused. They always, for the rest of the game, when you die, it brings you back to the map screen, but it starts you on the map screen on the first level. Now, you can just select whatever level you want at that point. But the very first time it happened on this playthrough, I was just like, oh, I just pressed the button real quick. And assuming I would be at the level we were at. And it's like, oh my God, you're kidding me. I have to beat the first level again? You're nuts. And so that was like a big misconception. We could do that. But then guess what? We ended up playing the first level a billion times because we have to farm for experience. So it is a thing you do. You do play through the first level a billion times and other levels later and stuff like that. But so that was one thing that it's totally what I thought. For 1 second, I'm like, fuck this game.
I have to go through the whole galaxy in one go. Yeah, they just didn't do a good job indicating what was being selected, like on any screen in the game. You know, nothing flashed. Just have a flashing indicator, man. That's all
I mean, it should start you at whatever level you are on.
On the map, yeah. On the map. It should. I mean, it should.
That's like 101. Like, that's just bizarre.
It just starts you in the first position every time.
Always defaults you in the first
position. Want to play the first level? Want to play the first level again?
Like, do you want to play the first levels already?
No, I don't. The other fun thing, too, is what happens when you've beaten a level already, Steve, and you get all the way to the end of it.
Yeah, there's no boss. And because you've already beaten the boss, so you get to the end of the screen before where the boss would be, and it does not let you proceed.
It doesn't do anything. So
we were like, I killed all the enemies, and they are pervasively dead for this go-through. They don't just respawn. So I guess we have to reset the game.
Right. How do I get out of here?
Because it wouldn't let us proceed. We're like, is there some trick that you can like exit the level? Like, we just didn't know what
to do. Nothing on the menu screen, like pressing select, there's nothing that says leave level, exit, nothing.
Right.
So,
and then like we played through like literally
a lot of the game.
85% or something of the game. We were so close to the end, and I accidentally did it. If you pause and then hold start, which other than this one thing, that's nothing at all in the entire game. So you have to be in the select menu, and then you have to hit start, hold down start, and then hit select again, and it will bring you to that map screen, and you can reselect what level you want to do. So if you get trapped, you can do that. But oh my God, there is no indication that
it's so like the start button literally does nothing. Only exists to be pressed and then hit select so you could do the insta map warp. Yeah. It's like
it must
you'll
be in the
just
book.
Never figure it out. It has to be in the book. That's the thing with old games is they did rely on the book for a lot of, you know, info and stuff like that. But yeah, without knowing that you're stuck in a level, you have to like save an enemy to kill you and then get
that's
out.
That's what we're
you
doing. Didn't know that. When we were grinding like back in that first level, we were like, okay.
Because that first level is the best level to grind in. The enemies are easy and they're worth like 4 points. The second and third levels, the enemies are harder and they're only worth 1 experience point. So the game's like, you need to go back to the first one to grind. Yeah. Which, you know, is I guess kind of cool. But yeah, so like, you know, that stuff is quirky. But the game itself has a pretty neat story. Honestly, I'm just going to read a synopsis off of summarized on Wikipedia, but all this information is contained in the text of the game, spread across a lot of the game though.
Yeah.
But then also in the manual. So the inhabitants of the three worlds in the Alpha 1 solar system have been at war for 7 months before hostilities upon the threat of invaders from the artificial world NGC 1611. The Alpha 1 Federation has gathered together the system's best defenses in an effort to repel the invasion. Two mechas and a self-aware robot are dispatched to NGC 1611, charged with the task of destroying the invader's power source and, if possible, locate the legendary weapon Zardian in the process. So you have, you know, generic star warfare between planets and you know, this other colony, but this other group being on an artificial planet. That's interesting.
It has a name that really rolls off the tongue.
Yeah, you know,
me
and NGC 1611.
SR388 sounds a little bit better.
By the pool. I like SR388. I think that's one of the best. That's real good. But yeah, so like the story that trickles through the game is pretty interesting, and all the level designs I think are one of the best parts of the game. I mean, the graphics in this game are good, right?
They're good. They're not great. They're totally good.
They're like good. They are not like this is a bad looking game. Like this is definitely a good looking game.
The character sprites are smaller than you want them to be. True. But yeah, I think even where the the backgrounds could probably look better, but man, even when that happens, the creativity is off the charts.
Yep. I mean, the first level is like a moving platform, moving train type platform. Then the second level, you're in this underwater ocean sphere place that has a like bottomless pit that if you go down it, it reveals a hidden boss that the game tells you you're not strong enough to defeat. Like dialogue pops up and says there's no way we can harm this thing, and you just walk the other way.
It's a Redoctopus.
It is a really, really Redoctopus, because that thing's got its brain on the outside and like eyeballs every goddamn where.
Its tentacles have like dog faces.
Yeah.
Not where I want those to be.
Not at all. It's not a dog, so I don't want a dog face on it. And like, so there's like the rest, this ocean levels is, you know, neat. There's these things floating on it. There's a, like an inner earth concept, like a ice planet that you then fall down a big long hole and you get to the inner earth.
Yeah.
And there's like a jungle and all this other shit.
It's totally like Edgar Rice Burroughs, Pellucidar stuff. You know, I mean, it's like, they even explain that there's like a phosphorescent light that's some chemical reaction that's mimicking the sun down there. And I mean, they actually bother saying that. They didn't need to say anything.
Right.
It's a video game. No one's going to even question it. But it's neat. You don't ever start on an ice place and then end up in the jungle. Like, it's just interesting. It's like, oh, this is a Hollow Earth level. Yep. I don't know. I really liked that level.
It's a very fun, a very fun design. And then they have you going through the center of the earth, climbing all the way up this tall, tall pillar until you cross over the gravitational line. And then you invert and you're now upside down, climbing up to the other side of the planet. And you, there's a desert world. There's the orbital elevator, which is like, you know, this massive tall structure that extends from one planet to another. That's like,
and back to the jungle in the Earth's core there of that one planet, there's a mystery there that is an element to this game that I always remembered. And I always remember people talking about this. If they talked about Zardian at all, which was not very often, but I feel like people remembered the giant rose. There was, there's just this bizarre section of that jungle that you start to come upon like some weird big flowers, and there's one like central gigantic rose, and then there's dialogue that comes up and it says something about like, oh, this is weird, you know, what I wonder what, you know, we should do here or something. And so it's like, just like with the Redoctopus, it's like, okay,
yeah,
mental note, we got to come back here
mental
at note. Some point, because we can't do it yet. But let's remember to come back here.
Mm-hmm. Yep. That's one of the neat things in this game.
Character.
Yeah.
Like, the moment.
They build
like,
a world in a game that didn't need this storytelling.
Yeah.
You know? And that's really, like, such an awesome strength of it. And yeah, I mean, there's really kind of, like, a major twist to the end of the game that's, you know, that honestly, I think sells the story even more. It's just very interesting. Once you finally beat whatever seems like the last level on the map screen, you actually go to NGC 1611 and you're on this artificial planet, and the map actually expands. It adds a whole new planet. So it's like, oh, surprise, there's more levels than you thought.
Yeah, there's like two more.
Yep. And this planet, first off, is like a really amazing set piece and just like a very creepy world, like, level that they made. You just get down onto this big idyllic grass fields, trees everywhere, just looks like this beautiful planet, but nothing is living. There's no creatures.
Yeah, it looks abandoned.
No intelligent life. It looks abandoned.
Even characters are like, oh, this is not what we expected.
Right. This planet looks like nobody lives here. Right. And they're like, this is the planet that's been deploying, you know, soldiers and attacking all these other planets. Right. So
they're
just completely
confused. They're expecting cities and armies. And it's like, no, this is just pristine green grass and trees. That's it.
Right. That's all that's here. Weird. And you land on the level, and the music is very surreal. It's very Twilight Zone. It's all theremin. It just very wants to set you on edge. And all of the trees and flaps of the earth with mud and stuff under them will be what comes up and actually starts attacking you as enemies. So the artificial planet is not only artificial, you know, for what you understood of that anyway. That wasn't well explained or anything.
Right.
But now you're also seeing that, like, it is its own organism somehow. It is fighting you off.
And you're the virus. These are the antibodies. Every section, every piece of this world can come alive as a monster. Yep. So, yeah, you walk past, and it's very strange, you know, again, on an island. I can't think of another game that has enemies that work like this, but the trees are there. They're part of the background. You walk past them. When you get, like, a step past the tree, it will wake up, and it'll get, like, I guess it's supposed to be an eye, but it kind of just looks like a butthole. I don't know. It's kind of weird. I was calling them butt trees, and then Tim turned it into flying buttresses, and it was a whole thing.
Flying butt trees.
And so what they do is they hop. So it's like a hopping butt tree. I don't know. It's really bizarre, but it only moves when you walk past it. So if it gets ahead of you again, it'll go back to being just static. And you can't even attack it when it's like that. You can only attack it when it opens up and, like, turns into a monster. And then other ones turn into flying creatures, and they're above you. And then other ones are, yeah, like you said, there's dirt. And the actual dirt comes up, and it's like grass-covered, dirt-clawed monsters. And they just are, like, dragging themselves along the ground. And they have, like, kind of weird faces and hands, but no lower half of the body. And as they go, they're ripping up the grass. And it's pretty cool, because they leave a trail of, like, ripped-up grass behind them. It's like very weird. It's
very inventive.
Truly inventive and unique and weird and memorable and creepy. And, you know, it's not what you expected. I mean, talk about subverting expectations for what you're going to find on the planet that has been making war on the whole galaxy. It's so weird.
Right. So, you know, fast forwarding through what the end of the game, you know, asks of you. You go to a spot in this living artificial planet. You go inside of it. The whole thing is squirming. It's like the last level of Contra. You know, it's like the 90s just came full tilt boogie for this spot, because there had to be a squirming, wriggling intestine level.
Right.
It's
just Abaddon.
It's right of passage.
NES. It's like there's so many games from the, like, late 80s, early 90s that all just. They all just had, like, an inside another creature as the final level. Like, Joe and Mac even ends with that you go in the T-Rex. Yep. Joe and Mac for Super Nintendo, and the final level's inside the T-Rex.
Oh, my God. That's so true.
It's like a devil that's, like, attacking the T-Rex's heart, making him evil.
Yep. I know there was levels in Bonk that you were inside
sure. And, mouth. Of course, the last level in Contra, I think, probably started it all, probably.
Yep. So you go in this big living planet, you end up fighting this battle, and this big eruption of hydrochloric acid starts to build up. And one of the weird things, further weird things about this game, is that all three of the characters, Triton, Alcides, and Panthera, have a ship form. They have a horizontal shooter style ship form that only appears in cutscenes. Now, this is such an obvious device for there to be horizontal shooting levels. Yeah. And there just aren't. Absolutely
should have been horizontal shooting levels. Like, why wasn't there?
Right. So they're only featured in these little, you know, whatever pre-done cutscenes. And this hydrochloric acid blast is rushing down the tunnel, and Panthera lags behind and gets engulfed in the hydrochloric acid and dies. And they're just like, oh, you know, what a shame. Yep, Kitty dies. What a shame. Let's duck into this little side channel here and avoid the rest of the acid, whatever. So Triton and Alcides make it up there. Just so happens to be it was the best mech in the world. Look into Zardian's eyes, and
this is the actual Zardian. One,
And it's just perfectly encased in this big blue, you know, contraption, and they're like, oh, Zardian, this is the ship, this is the ultimate weapon of this colony that they deployed to just wipe out planets. He is the shit ship all day long. But the thing that's so weird is that he's the enemy's like secret weapon, and they just kind of go over to it and open up the device and are like, yay, we have you now. And Zardian's just a good guy. Like, he's just on your side. Like, yeah. What? I don't understand. He's like the equivalent of the enemy facilities, like nuke. Like, they drop him on a planet and the planet gets destroyed. That is what the lore describes. And, or he just wants to be your pal and it's totally fine. Like, it's very weird.
He is cool looking, though. He's extremely cool. I think it's a good upgrade. You know, we lost the dog guy,
but no one wanted to be Panthera.
Well, I think no one wanted to be Alcides, to be fair.
That's true. Everyone wanted Panthera to be better, but Panthera wasn't better.
Yeah.
That's the real problem. We wanted to be better.
Right. Although, at this point, we had gotten really good with Alcides because we're like, well, let's just take the time and get everybody's, like, all their stuff. And, like, whatever. You know, we're probably never going to play this game again.
Beef them all up.
And so, you know, we maxed everybody out, like I said. And, you know, we had really not been playing SLCD. So he was like kind of the most behind. So, you know, we were like, all right, let's take like half an hour and let's get him up. And, he is like, he becomes basically a broken character because when he gets his third like special attack, it makes him invincible for way too long.
Yeah. It's like a 30 second long time.
It's like, I mean, it's like so long and it doesn't even take much of his ammunition to even do it. Like, nope. You would think it would take half of it or something, and he's only going to be invincible for 5 seconds. It's like, no.
It's so broken.
You can probably do it, like, for the entire level. Like, it's so generous. And so then you're like, okay, well, you're just literally invincible. And as he gains levels, he also gets, like, a dinky little projectile that he does shoot when he does his, like, head whip, and then the projectile eventually gets bigger. So something we have not mentioned that I think really needs to be mentioned is that one of the bummers about this game before we like get to the ending is, in my opinion, is that it's just like the gameplay itself. There is fun to be had when you realize you're leveling up, you're working on stuff, you're like every death is not wasted. There is fun to be had in a weird way that you're not expecting, like you said.
Yep.
But there's never like a fun action game like quality,
right? Ever.
You're never gonna get like, never. Oh, this is a Mega Man that's fun to like jump around and shoot, and like this is just objectively fun to play. It's like, no, it's a slog. It's like never fun to play. The characters are too slow, their jumping is bizarre, absolutely
so high, so floaty.
So high and floaty, and then they just like slam down. It just feels very glitchy. The way that they all jump, it just never feels good. And when, even if you're jumping forward, they don't really have a lot of horizontal movement when they jump. So it's like you're barely able to move when you jump. I don't know.
Yeah. Crossing gaps is not like what jumping's for. It's mostly for getting onto a higher platform.
Getting up here. Yeah. So like, I don't know. There's just a lot of things that could have made this game awesome. But unfortunately, you know, all the stuff that would make a walk around, run and gun, shooter type platformer like a Mega Man fun, this game sucks at. It does other things good, but it sucks at all those things. And sadly, all of the projectiles and all the weapons that you get for, which is, like we said, like there's like, you know, 4 special attacks per guy,
yep,
plus your regular attack, and the regular attack is upgradable. And it does change size eventually, like, you know, barely. And yet, through all of them, there's not a single fun attack to be had. It's no. Like, you know, like, if you think of, like, really, really old, like, shoot 'em up games for the NES, how that was, like, before the era where we're going to make shoot 'em ups all about having insanely big weapons, and it was just, like, little yep. bullets. Everything's just, you're shooting little bullets.
Little pew-pew
it's,
bullets.
It's not even about, like, I'm thinking, like, Alpha Zone for the NES. Like, you're never going to upgrade that. It is just pew, 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 and it sucks. There's nothing fun about the weapon in that game, and that's Zardia. Like, it's just the most pathetic little lame ass shots throughout the entire game. No matter what weapon you get, yep. no matter how much you upgrade,
do not feel any
it never
better
becomes cool.
At like highest power level.
It's imagine like, if this played cool. like a Mega Man X. If right. the gameplay felt like Mega Man X, and you had big powerful attacks, this game would be legendary.
It would really it would be so good.
There's a lot great about this game technically, but it's buried in such bad game design that it truly is like not a really great game. But
no.
recommend but, it if you're willing to stick with it.
Right.
And understand that it's not like other games.
You and should play Zardian because if you have the patience, you will come away with the ability to say, I just played something unlike any other game I've yeah. ever played.
Yeah.
Like, it's a truly singular experience with very interesting writing and world mm-hmm. building in a way that makes you go, huh, I'm on level 4 and I kind of want to see what happens next. But yeah. it's not like the strongest thing ever pushing you forward, but it's all these little rosy moments throughout the not very good game. That yeah. overall made me go, I like this game.
I like it. Yeah.
It's like, yeah. It's like, it's, I like
it's
this weird. Game. I don't know.
It's also, I think there are moments that made me think this is Dark-like. This is Dark Souls-like. Like, it's like you have to know where stuff is and where to jump and learn by dying a lot of times
yeah.
because everything is very specifically placed that I sort of felt like there was that element too. And like right. enemies don't come back. So it's like you just kind of go through it and like I don't know, I feel like you have to mess up a lot of times.
Right. Yep. It is not a game that you are meant to be able to go through with no deaths. Like it's expecting you to die, which is the yeah, Dark Souls like,
so
too. Yeah. And
you said earlier you literally couldn't do it if you didn't die yeah. because you wouldn't be able to get strong enough to do
yeah. anything. Yeah, I truly don't think you would. I think you can't beat the game at level 0. You know, I don't think it's possible. I'd love to see a low percent. If there's speedrunners for Zardian, I'm going to look as soon as we're done recording now. but yeah, if there's a low percent where you can get through it on level 0, I'd be fascinated to see it. Yeah. But yeah, so, you know, you get Zardian, they replace Panthera, and then you are stuck in a part of the living planet that is just a loop. There's a bunch of places you can go and they all lead back to square one, and you actually have to leave the planet and you have to go back to the earlier planets with those weird things that you vaguely remember right. and revisit them as Zardian.
All the mental notes. You gotta yep. look them up.
Yep.
The Rolodex of your
go.
Gray matter.
Last 4 hours, I was, what was that, Rose? So you got to go back to each one of those places. It's basically worth it to just play. If you don't remember, just play through the game from the beginning. You'll get through all the levels pretty quickly. Mm-hmm. But yeah, so you have to go revisit the Red Octopus. You kill his ass, dead so fast, not even hard. And then you get an item from him. You go to the Rose, you get an item there, and then you go to Fiera, the desert planet, and one of the pathways you could go, there was another little side area that was empty. Now it has an item there. By far the lamest one. They clearly just had no fucking
time. Yeah, I wish they all had bosses. I wish the Rose came alive.
Bosses.
Or fully. I think what would have been really cool is if the Rose fully bloomed and there was something inside of it, like a creature inside.
Or like another mini level that was the inside of the Rose kind of thing. Like
it was just very cramped. It's very small level.
It's just very clear that they're like, yeah, basically we're going to do a boss for the first one.
Basically the size of a porta potty.
Yeah, a porta potty Rose.
Mm-hmm.
But
still would have been cooler than nothing.
They should have made a boss fight for each of them. Yeah. They dropped the ball big time on the third one. There's just nothing. It's just in a little hallway that you've like, oh, you're like, okay, whatever. Yeah. That's random. Yeah. So once you get all those, you can go back to the level you were stuck at. And Zarya
now back to level LJN 2099.
laughing, joking, numbnuts, son of a bitch. They have there's a fourth weapon now for Zardian. So he has the light arrow. You can go back to where the level was you were stuck. There's a big glowing orb. You shoot it with the light arrow. It blows up, and you're able to get into the second part of the last level and go through that, solve the little maze that they put up for you there, and then you go to the last corridor, the final stretch of the game where the music changes yet again. I should say the music throughout this game is fitting. Like, I wouldn't say that it's all good. It has some songs that are great, but all the instrumentation is a little wonky, and the sound effects all sound like farts. Like, hardcore.
Oh my god. I'm sorry. We almost didn't mention that. The farts in this game.
Fucking farts are every
sound effect. They're all brown notes. Every single sound effects are brown.
Everything. Like, you'll be shooting a bunch of enemies and it's just... And, like, you go to, you know, shoot your laser beam through a boss, and it just triggers the fart sound effect, like, 100 times. So it's just this massive shart. And it's just never-ending. Not a single thing in this game doesn't make a big, wet fart sound.
Endless shart. Endless shart.
It is. It is Zardian, semicolon, endless shart. But, yeah, the music throughout this game also is very fitting. It's very weird. Lots of creepy, lots of dissonance, lots of, you know, just kind of ambient whatever. Some bangers. But this last screen shifts and the music changes one last time. And you're like, okay, you know, this is clearly going to be like the final stretch here. And why don't you describe what the boss is like, Steve?
So it's bizarre. It's like, they give you all the rest of the story in the ending. So you don't really understand really what's happening at this point, but you, I think we kind of glossed over it, but the second to last boss is worth mentioning. Oh my God. Definitely my favorite boss in the game.
Oh, right. I did gloss over that. Yeah.
It was like a room boss, not a Roomba. It doesn't vacuum, but, it's a, like, you know, what I mean is like, it's like, part of the room. It's like attached to the ceiling and the right wall and the floor, and it's just all these weird heads and faces, and it is creepy as hell. And you have to kill each one of the faces, and they take a billion hits and they turn into skulls. I mean, it's like disturbing. It's really awesome.
Yeah,
I think it's the best sprite in the game personally.
Anyway,
you get to the final boss, and the background is creepy too. It looks like there are these like weird pods with like partially formed clone people or something. They don't have any faces or details on them. They're just kind of like mannequins. Very strange. They don't explain that, but again, this is the, you know, the artificial planet. And so like you come upon this weird creature. It's kind of orange and gray, but you can't really super make it out. And it's kind of the size that you are. Takes a bunch of hits, and then it transforms. And it becomes bigger and totally different. And then you beat that, and it transforms again. There are five forms to this final boss. And the deal is, it's supposed to be kind of like... it's supposed to be kind of like the character Doomsday from Superman, where, you know, that character is supposed to be like the ultimate life form, because every time he dies, he is resurrected and now is strong against whatever killed him last time. So that's why, like, he's all covered in bones and spikes, and even has spikes on his eyelids and stuff. Cause like, apparently he's been killed all those ways and now he's protected, whatever. So like, this is sort of the same idea. It's like every time you kill it, it evolves better into something bigger and more perfect or whatever. And it ends up being this absolutely awesome final boss. I still like the room full of baby heads better, but like I love that one will never be beat.
But yeah, this boss is so good.
It's hard to even describe all of these forms, to be honest. I mean,
yeah,
they're very weird. They really are unique, but you can see like kind of like a woman's face, and it's very like, you know, Resident Evil-ish, you know, it's just like brains in weird places and limbs that are claws and yep. There's like some, it's got like a big shell on the back and like a,
yeah, like
the shell, like a conch shell kind of shell, and some crabby legs, and like it, I mean it is just bizarre, but it's so cool.
Yeah,
so cool. Takes a million hits, but none of these five forms are hard. They kind of just all walk, other than the first form that goes back and forth. All the other ones just kind of walk backwards.
Yep.
So it's like, all right, well, this is just easy. It's just bizarre. It's
weird. Yeah, they have all these different projectiles and stuff that they shoot at you, but none of them were much of an issue.
You did it like our first try or a second try?
Yeah, second try after. All I had to do was make sure I got Zardied on the highest level, and then I was like, okay, I'll try it one more time, and got it.
And then we did it, yeah. Try. So yeah, max out your guys. But then you get to the ending, and can I read the ending?
Yeah, absolutely, you can.
All right. So this is the weirdest freaking thing. Okay. So again, we knew none of this before. All we knew is that there is an artificial planet. It's like ABC 2099. I don't know what it is. So, okay.
ABC 1611.
So like, okay, that's it. And we get there, and it's this weird thing, and then it gets weirder and weirder. And then we're inside the organism, like you were saying, and then you end up in this clone chamber, whatever. So we don't know anything of any of this. This is all delivered in the ending. It says, all, and remember, this is like, it moves past the screen.
Way too fast.
To even be able to read it all. But so listen up, folks, because this is the best way to get this info is here on Retro Redactivus. Here we go.
Here it is.
Says all planets eventually die. One scientist applied his knowledge to avoid this. His work, Project New Frontier, created a living planet named NGC 1611. But the power of man is no match for nature's power. The project ended in failure. NGC 1611 began undergoing violent changes. It became a nest of monsters where people could not survive. The scientist gave the supercomputers final instructions. Protect my daughter. Eliminate all intruders. But she perished, and the supercomputers didn't know how to obey their last orders now that she was already dead. Finally, a hologram of the girl was found in memory. They projected it into this capsule, which they're showing you on the screen, which became a shrine to her. It was to protect this image that the Guardians incited this terrible planet-wide war. Now, I understand this is all translated from the Japanese. It's not like that was written so incredibly well, but holy crap, you're telling me, instead of a galactic empire or something like that just wants power, wants control, whatever. No, this was a scientist was trying to create the perfect world, but it got out of hand, and the world started to kill all the people that were on it. So then he's like, well, I have a daughter. So he makes all his computers do one thing only. Don't worry about anything else. Everybody else can die. I don't care. Just make sure my daughter's safe. But she was already dead. So now the computers have like a problem. They're like, well, how do we do this thing?
Syntax error. Like, I can't protect her. She's already dead.
Right. But, yeah. And so they're like, well, let's just make a fake version of her that's a hologram. Put it in a pod and we'll protect that. That's probably just as good, right?
It's the best they could do. As robots only following a prime directive, they're like, well, They replicated the thing that needed protecting. Yep. And so this planet was out there sending out all these destructive devices, all in service of just, you know, keeping safe what was already dead.
It's a completely useless.
Yep, completely useless endeavor. So what you accomplish is by destroying, you know, the center of the planet, and wiping out all of their, you know, manufacturing of these, you know, machines, robots, death machines, whatever they were doing, and then the ending just shows like 200 years later, and it just
it fast forwards, right?
Yeah.
Do you have that stuff?
Desert. Yeah, it's it says. 200 years later, a living planet. I wonder if life will return to this planet. Someday it may be green and beautiful again. Let's hope war is a thing of the past. Zardian, the legendary weapon, sleeps here again. Maybe history will fade away into nature. And from here, the new story of NGC 1611 will begin. And it shows a really awesome graphic of this giant tree with Zardian completely, like, encased and covered in vines and stuff that the tree has just grown around him as he lies there dormant. And it's wicked cool.
It's really cool. Honestly. It's a really interesting ending, you know? And it shows, like you said, it's all desert. So this is the planet that was all green and pristine and beautiful and everything was coming to attack you, but it all got destroyed. So it's just such a somber bummer of an ending and feel like, my God, everything was futile. Everything was for no reason because all these computers were controlling this planet and in service of this hologram, protecting a hologram of a girl who had died, you know, hundreds of years ago.
Yep.
I mean, like, it's really, really just different.
Yeah. Yeah, it is. And definitely is one of the coolest aspects, you know, to look back on the game and then see the levels that you played through and to just, you know, kind of envision like, oh, wow, this massive war or whatever. And this whole reason is just for nothing. And like, honestly, we were saying at the top of the episode, you know, this game was just made in a vacuum, like it was not based on something else.
Right.
But man, I really wish it had shit based on it.
I do too. I do too.
Like, I would totally read, you know, comics or whatever. And I heard that there is a prequel manga to Zardian, but I can't find anything about it.
I also read that, but it was created with this game. It's not like it was from that. Like, that was just part of the marketing for this. So the story and the characters were made for this game. But yeah, that would be cool to find. I mean, I'm sure it's just going to be in Japanese.
Japanese, most likely. But I would love to read that. But yeah, this is a neat enough thing that I truly wish it became an anime or a movie or OVA or something.
Yeah.
But yeah, it was a good playthrough. Like, like you said, it's not like it was like this game was so much fun. But it was a cool playthrough that I'm glad we did.
It was kind of satisfying. Like, in the end, I mean, it was frustrating a lot, but in the end of it all, it's like, I'm glad we sucked through it and stuck with it and got our way through. And yeah, I mean, I feel kind of proud that we finally did it. And it sort of makes sense, you know, afterwards where like, yeah, we get why Mom was good at this game and why she liked this game because it was unlimited guys. So, you know, you're always making progress, and no matter if you die 1,000 times, you're still in it. And you have to be really patient, and she tended to like slower action games. If they were action at all, they kind of had to be slow. Like, you know, we said she liked Toki, that random going ape spit game for the Genesis. And, like, that's a very slow-paced, plotting action game, too. That's not a Mega Man. She wasn't good at Mega Man. But, like, you know, there's something about this that's like, this is actually very Mom.
Yeah. Yeah, 100%. It makes total sense that she would have just kind of kept with it and beat this game. And it was really cool to finally do that and just see, you know, the game for its highlights and stuff. And, yeah, I mean, I think overall I had a great time doing it.
Yeah, me too. And it's really funny that of all the games that we've spotlit, for these Crow's Nest. I mean, it's actually been a long time. I think it's been a couple years, two years. A game like you and I, because we were kind of doing it a lot.
We're doing it two summers ago. Summer 2022.
We were doing a bunch of them.
Yeah.
And then we kind of, you know, we did, you know, I don't know, what did we do? Like Willow and we did
Crystallis and Zelda 2 and Xanadu. Yeah, Clash of Demon Head.
Clash of Demon Head might be the last one we did. Like, I don't know. Oh, no. The last one we did, I think, was last season, which was Sweet Home.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, yeah.
But right. I think that's the only one we did all of last year.
Yeah.
So yeah, it's kind of fun to, you know, have gotten a chance to play it, kind of, you know, go through something that was very mom, and also, you know, beat it and enjoy it. I mean,
and have like, a new appreciation for it, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So we're like, oh, we gotta hop on and do a crow's nest. Gotta do it.
Absolutely.
And we did beat it last night. You know, we just beat it.
Yeah. Yeah. It was yesterday as of recording this. So yeah. Mm-hmm. Very fresh in the old brain pan, but good time. And yeah. And great to sit on this here crow's nest and chat about it with you.
Yeah. And before we go, I just think it's really funny. I don't have it open anymore, but our Retroid buddy Mike Scully mentioned that he thought Zardian looked very much like a specific Gundam. Was that the same Gundam that we found out that it there's like a model kit?
So the Gundam that it is able to be
it's like a mod kit or something.
Yeah, it's called like a smash kit or something. Kit. Brick. Damn it. I had it up before. I didn't think we were gonna cover it. But yeah, they have a fan made mod for a Gundam kit that you can use to turn it into Zardian. It's called a Kit Bash. Zardian Kit Bash, and it's pretty fucking awesome.
So it looks exactly which is the Gundam that goes with?
The Gundam that it goes with is called the NK-13J Denial Gundam.
Oh, okay. So Mike Scully said he thought it looked like the, I don't know how to pronounce it, She Gundam? XI Gundam?
Okay. I don't know my Gundam.
So I was just kind of wondering if that happened to be the same one. I know.
Oh, it definitely looks a lot like the She Gundam. Like, it looks way more like the She Gundam than it looks like the Denial Gundam, to be honest. Yeah, that's a way better comparison. You would need to do a lot less to make that Zardian. but yeah, the Denial Gundam with the Kit Bash for Zardian on it looks goddamn awesome. It really does. It's super cool. So whoever made that, props to you. That's awesome. But yeah, anyway, so that is, I mean, the longest
road. That's Zardian, man.
Zardian, we're glad
that... It's a weird game that I bet a lot of people don't even remember. Because it's
probably heard of.
A very obscure game. Very weird.
Right.
I don't know, for some reason. Whatever it was, Mom loved it. Yeah, so I'm seeing the Zardian Gundam with the kit. Oh my god, it looks really good.
Yeah, it looks really good.
He looks perfect. His feet are perfect. Yeah,
it's awesome. So I'll have to be digging for that Kit Bash, because that would be so much fun to do.
Cool to actually have Zardian.
To have a Zardian Gundam kit. Hell yeah, really, really love it. But yeah, anyway, that's it. Well, we'll stop jabbering. Thank you for listening, and thank you, Parasite Steve, for doing this with me.
Yeah, that was super
fun. Really fun to get that game under the belt you know, kind of get to chat about it here. So thank you, everybody. Just want to say our usual Bologna. So that is the end of this here episode. If you haven't jumped ship by now, we certainly hope that you enjoyed this journey over one of the treacherous waters of one of the things that made someone's childhood better. Not necessarily everyone's. Nobody played Zardian. But if you like what you heard, please hit us up on Facebook and subscribe to the show on your podcast app of choice. Find us on Twitter, X at Redoctopus, and also on Good Pods, where you can give us a like and a feedback and a little comment and a, you know, a little this and that and a scratch on the back. That would be super cool. So check us out on Good Pods. We are part of the InebriArt Podcast Network, as well as the Dorkening Podcast Network. So if you get a chance, please check out shows on the Dorkening, like Splash Pages, Throwdown Thursday, Epic Tales from the Sewer, and Still Toking With. For more information, or to subscribe to us or any of these great shows, please visit thedorkening.com, and be sure to check out our sponsors, Deadly Grounds Coffee, coffee to die for. I have been your host, 8-Bit Alchemy, and I will catch you next time.